First things, David Domke, for a, what is today? Is today Saturday, Friday? I don't even remember anymore. It's just Blur's Day.
Blur's Day. Blur's Day, December 26th. I like that. I like that. It's Saturday, Steve. That's Saturday.
Right. That's right.
The day after Christmas and 10 days until Georgia is done voting on January 5th. So I mark all of my life now by election days. Okay.
Yeah.
And by significant presidential confirmation events. So we are 10 days from January 5th when Georgia's done voting, 11 days from January 6th when the Electoral College is affirmed in the Congress. And we are 14 more days after that. So 25 days from Inauguration Day. That's where everything is in. Oh, by the way, January 5th, also my 30th wedding anniversary.
Oh, exciting. 30 years.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I got, I'm on solid ground because my wife, the other day referred to it as the 10th or something. And, I'm in good shape because I know what day it is. I know it's 30, all of that. I know it's the 30th, all of that.
30 years. So if I can do the math properly, that makes it 1991.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
You were just what? You were 14 or something at the time?
23.
Yeah.
Man, I know. If my kid wants to get married at 23, no way I'm shipping them to Scotland for okay. So hey, let's jump in. What I want to do today is to have you play a clip to start here from Ensay Ufot, who is the executive director of our main partner organization in Georgia. New Georgia Project is the name of the organization. They have been an absolute force in registering voters and building a new Georgia. They were started by Stacey Abrams in 2013, and she has handed off the leadership over time to others. She now runs Fair Fight Action. But Ensay Ufot is phenomenal. She's the executive director, and they have been so influential in registering voters over the last many years. We now have only 2% of voters in Georgia who have not been registered to vote in that state. Voting eligible population of folks who've been not registered yet, which is amazing.
Wow.
It's amazing. So she was on a podcast with Kai Wright, a podcast I recommend to everybody called The U.S. of Anxiety, The United States of Anxiety. And it's weekly, done by WNYC, and works. It gets distributed through the member NPR stations around the country. I don't understand how that all works, but you probably could give us a deep dive on that.
You don't need it. You said it.
Okay. Yeah, and you can find it, U.S. of Anxiety. It's a great podcast. This was from the 21st of December. Here's an answer right at the end of an interview that Kai Wright is doing with Ensay Ufot. And this is about how work gets done politically. And I want to use this to talk about how common power works and why we're part of a broader constellation of organizations building change in our voting arena.
Before I let you go, I'm wondering if you buy my theory about this being sort of a historic pivotal moment in Georgia's history of democracy. And I know you're in the heat of the battle. You're still trying to get people to vote in this current election, so it's hard to reflect on it yet. But does it feel like this is how does this moment feel to you in the sweep of your state's history?
It feels watershed-y. what we have seen, you know, there's a lot of hand-wringing. So on election night, you know, as we are digging into the data, looking at the numbers, it appeared as if President Trump was ahead on election night. But what we knew is that there were more votes to be counted in counties where we have been doing deep community organizing and electoral organizing. And if those ballots were counted, that we would have a ball game and we would be able to demonstrate that Georgia was America's newest battleground state. And so we've been bullish on Georgia and Black voters for quite some time. And 2018 felt like an opportunity to show that to the world. You know, we saw, you know, what happens when the Secretary of State is on the top of the ticket and refuses to relinquish his role and sort of as the chief elections officer. And what happened 2020 feels like it has given us another opportunity to prove what we've known for a long time, that this former slave state, this former Confederate state, is America's newest battleground state. Voters of color, in addition, Black voters in particular, but Asian American voters and Latino voters make up this multiracial, multi-ethnic, progressive majority in the Deep South. And that if we can hold them together, that we can, one, make sure they vote, and two, make sure their votes count, then we have a ball game. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, adding an additional proof point with these runoff elections.
Insa Ufot is the CEO of the New Georgia Project, which has spent recent years registering hundreds of thousands of new voters in Georgia, trying to make the electorate reflect the state's diverse population.
When she speaks of these Georgia voters, and you were saying all but about 2% of eligible voters are registered, that's a pretty amazing statistic. And their organization is at the forefront, and therefore Common Power at the forefront of making that happen.
It is. It's amazing. So how did that? So New Georgia Project is the leader in this work. They are. And they are. They have built and also just been part of a coalition of organizations in Georgia that are really spectacular in their organizing work. And they have pushed for automatic voter registration, which was created in 2016, passed in 2016 by the legislature there, which registers every person to vote automatically, registers them to vote when they get their driver's license in the state. That's a huge thing. Then New Georgia Project and these other orgs, like Asian American Advocacy Fund, Poder Latinx, Georgia Equality, many other orgs in this constellation have been registering tirelessly in communities around the state. So they've dropped from 2016 to 2020 from, I believe, 30% unregistered in 2016 to 2% today. That is the necessary condition, but not sufficient, but necessary in order to bring about electoral change in these environments where certain populations have been completely discriminated against and voter suppressed for some time. And it's remarkable to listen to her kind of talk about that work. And she says there, at the end, she goes, we have to make sure everybody can vote and then that their votes are counted. I would say that there's two parts to the can vote. It's the registering to vote. And I'm sorry, she says that we want everybody to vote and that their votes are counted. Well, in order to be able to vote, you have to be registered, and then you actually have to cast the vote. So they register the vote, you cast the vote, and then you have your votes counted. That third piece, having your votes counted, is such a game changer in these states where voter suppression is predominant, where your vote signature match has to be identical, or where you get purged from voter rolls if you don't vote every federal election, or where the state makes it difficult for you to get the necessary voter identification cards to show. Those three things, register to vote, cast your vote, and have your votes counted, is the formula. It is the necessary formula for changing our society. And this has come about through the work of organizations like New Georgia Project, one of our great partners, the New Virginia Majority, Mia Familia Vota, organizations that we are thrilled to partner with around this country. You Can Vote in North Carolina. And so we are part of this network, and we bring our human power to support their work. And it is never for sure, but it is always necessary to bring about this change. And we are now seeing it works. We're part of the recipe of how it works. And now we have to solidify and sustain and say, like, this is what we are part of. We will not stand down. We will always show up.
Well, that's great. I mean, that seems like an honest and fair way of doing things. And there are organizations all around that are supporting that, and Brennan Center at a national level, trying to compile information about what's happening. But, you know, as you said, you run into this opposition, right? Opposition that wants to get rid of automatic voting registration and all the other tools. What's the what's the game plan as you confront those opponents?
Sure. So there's really two things. So the necessary work is registering people to vote, making sure they do vote, which is the get out the vote, and then making sure their votes count, which is the political and legal dimensions of what happens after votes are cast. Your question really entails all three of those in certain ways. But I will say that ultimately the broader mission is twofold. One is to win elections that allow us to put into place people who will then change laws. So those are the two pieces. You have to win elections, and then when people get into office, you have to get them to enact the right voting laws. So that's the 1-2 piece. Now the challenge is you got to win the elections on the terms that are set by those that are suppressing the votes, right? Because they've set the terms they've set the rules. So how do we do that? Massive voter pushes beyond anything that we are familiar with in the last 50 years in this country. Massive voter pushes. It's Freedom Summer in 1964 on a grander, larger scale. So you have to overwhelm the system with more people turning out to vote than ever before. And that is enough to overcome the voter suppression. That's how you win the elections. And then when you win the elections, you pass laws. You get the folks to pass laws that expand voting. We've accomplished this in Colorado. We've accomplished this in Virginia. We've accomplished this in not as far as we want, but we're getting there, in Arizona, with the Secretary of State that we elected in 2018, Katie Hobbs. We accomplished this with Secretaries of States in Michigan and North Carolina and Pennsylvania. So we are getting there. But notice I keep saying Secretaries of State, right? We have not gotten there with state parties, state legislatures, because those are so gerrymandered. So we are still in mostly step one, which is massive voter mobilization so that we can win these elections. And then when we get there, pass the laws. We have a long way to go on the first one, and the climb is still significant, but it works. It does work. It just takes enormous calling, texting, postcarding, door knocking, mobilization, time, treasure, all of that. It is not a time efficient process. It requires a massive infusion of investment.
Well, I mean, if you want that 98% of eligible voters to be registered, that's an amazing commitment. Can you give me, just for my own edification here, what's lacking in Arizona? Let's take Arizona as an example. What's still lacking in Arizona that presents hurdles for getting folks registered?
So in Arizona, the process of registering requires a voter identification. That's a challenge to getting that people there, because not everybody has the, as the state legislature mandated, sets of identification forms, and is particularly less likely to be held, the ID forms, to be held among African-Americans and Latino-Americans, who are much more skeptical and concerned about the power of the government, the state. So getting rid of voter ID laws would be an important piece. That's what they did in Virginia when the Democrats got control of the state legislature and the governorship. And in Arizona, we don't have a state legislature. We tried really hard in 2020 to flip the state legislature, didn't get there, but we're just on the cusp of it. And so it's there, it's within reach. So voter ID laws would be one thing in the state. And to get there, we need to win the legislature and the governorship, because the governor would just veto it as a Republican. Well, we've won in the last three years total, 2018, 19, and 20, two U.S. Senate seats and the presidency in Arizona because of the massive voter turnout. So we've been able to do it. We've been able to do it. If we can now push that massive infusion further down into the state ballots at the legislature level, then we got a great shot to expand voting in that state. And once you start to expand voting opportunities and to wipe away the voter suppression, that's when now you're in the realm of a real democracy. And also the Democrats as a party have a much greater chance because so many of their voters are the targets of voter suppression.
So for example, automatic voter registration is in Georgia, it's in Virginia, it's in West Virginia, it's in the West Coast, Nevada, Colorado, not in Arizona, for example.
Right. So automatic voter registration is this policy in which a person is automatically registered to vote, hence the name, automatically registered to vote when they interact with the state in some significant way, a state agency. Usually it starts with the Department of Motor Vehicles when you get your driver's license. And you can be pre-registered at the age of 16 or 17 to vote so that it automatically gets into the system and then clicks over to register you to vote when you turn 18. Research after research has shown that when AVR is adopted in states, voter registration goes much, much higher because people are automatically registered to vote and they don't opt out. They don't bother to do that. They stay registered to vote. And then in turn, they do vote. Once registered, you're more likely to vote. It totally makes sense. It's like if you can eat, then you, okay. So if you can participate in the political process, the democratic process, you're far more likely to do so because you don't have to overcome the hurdle of going out and figuring out how to register to vote. You just are. It's not there in Arizona. In 2018, we helped to pass it as a ballot initiative in Nevada. So it is in Nevada. We helped to get it there. It got passed in 2018 in Michigan. We helped to pass it there. In Virginia, the state legislature enacted it after we helped the legislature to flip to Democratic. This is a major piece. When you look at Georgia, 2016, AVR gets put into place. And even though it's a state with massive voter ID challenges and signature matching suppression, still you have this kind of change that can occur with these orgs coming in and helping people to understand that they are registered to vote and now they can vote. So I think AVR is a major piece for us to push around the country. We will not lead these things because they got to be state-based and an org in the state has got to lead it. But we will be sure to partner with those orgs that are pushing AVR. It is a structural change that the public wants. They passed it in very large percentage majorities when it's on the ballot. and we can help it to happen. So let's say we got that on the ballot in Arizona. It solidifies this move to blue. All right. But if we could get it on the ballot in Texas, oh my God, that would be a game changer, because, you know, the percentage of non-registered voters in Texas is so high that even though you get out all these people to vote who are registered, so many still aren't registered. So that's a major thing we'll be working on in the next many years.
I see that there are people, again, like the Brennan Center, who push for automatic voter registration law coming out of Congress to ask states to you know, create these systems that are already in place in, what'd you say, 16 states? What's the possibility there, do you think?
Oh, let me quick clarify. So are you, I did not know how many states. Is that something you're looking at? 16 states have AVR?
I thought that's what I saw. I'll go back and count it again since I'm
sure. So you're right. It's on the West Coast. It's more likely to be on the West Coast and the East Coast. For example, the state of New York just adopted it. Oh, this is a great example. New York's a very blue state, obviously, extremely blue. One of the bluest out there, along with California and Washington, but they didn't have AVR. They just adopted it now when the state legislature moved from split, essentially, in the Senate to strongly Democratic in this election. And so they moved forward already after the election, before the new legislature sworn in, to adopt AVR. We in the state of Washington didn't have AVR until 2017, when we flipped the control of the state Senate with Monica Dingra's election in the 45th state legislative Senate district in the east side. So even blue states haven't had AVR. It is a structural solidification of bringing people in the political process. We should all want it. Everybody should want it. And indeed, voters do want it. The Republicans don't want it, but voters want it. Democrats want it. And once it's in place, it's a game changer. And Georgia's exhibit A of that. So pushing for it across these states would be great. Now, could it be done at the federal level? This, I don't know. Maybe it can be done on the federal level as part of a national voter registration move, or as part of the new John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Could it be in there? I'd love it. Will states backlash against it? Of course they will, just like they did against healthcare, just like they do against anything that's really, really good but still comes from the federal government. Nonetheless, AVR in any states will be part of our body of work. We got to get people. 18
states and the British and the District of Columbia.
Sure. So is it in Wisconsin?
No.
Is it in Ohio?
No. Or Pennsylvania or Florida?
Or Florida.
Or Michigan.
Uh-huh. No, Michigan is it's
I mean, excuse after. Me. I meant Michigan. Yes, Michigan has it. I mean Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, all those sort of swingy states, Texas, Florida.
Right. So there's like eight states, six to eight that you just referenced, that we will target, that we will focus on. And by that, I mean, we will find or build stronger partner relationships in those states that emphasizes automatic voter registration. This is something that we can get done. Now, to finish up this morning's podcast, in Georgia, back to the point you raised earlier, in Georgia, there's going to be law changes after this election. And the first thing that's going to get taken or get done is they're going to remove no excuse absentee voting. The Republican legislature is going to take it away, because even though it's been around since, I think, 2000, no excuse absentee voting, the reality is now that Democrats are doing it in large numbers, the Republican legislature and Secretary of State and Governor want to get rid of it. They're going to get rid of it. So it'll be allowed, what will be left is excuse-based absentee voting, where you've got to have a very specific reason. Not, you can't just do it for anything because you want to. They'll get rid of that. But they're not going to get rid of automatic voter registration. That's a different endeavor altogether. They're not going to get rid of it. And that's going to, as long as that's structurally there, the reality is people are registered to vote. And then you fall back on the orgs that say, okay, we don't have absentee voting, but we still have early voting. We still have day of voting. We can get this done. So there you go. If you have the structure in place, you can still find ways around the suppression. And eventually, if we do this work and keep it doing it, the state legislature will creep more Democratic in that state, and it will change. And we might get a Democratic governor as early as 2022 when Stacey Abrams will be running again.
That'll be remarkable.
That will be. And, you know, I want to finish up here just by saying, you know, the journey, the podcast is you and me talking in the morning, Steve, and it's sharing kind of mindset. It's about our community. It's about mobilization. And it's also about figuring things out for me. And I realize in doing this particular episode that the states you just mentioned that don't have AVR, they need to be high priority for us going forward. Like, that is an intervention that we can make a difference on. I knew it in theory, but when you started naming them, I'm like, yeah, yeah. Yep, Wisconsin, Ohio, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, fucking Florida. Okay, we can get this done. It doesn't change the world overnight. It takes a little bit of time, but it is a necessary condition.
Let's get to work.
Let's go, man. Let's go. 10 days to January 5th, 11 to January 6th, 26 or 5 to inauguration. Steve, you and I, we're going to do podcasts every morning at 8 a.m. for the next 17 years, okay?
Yeah. No, 7:20. But yeah. Have to get it out there for folks by 8.
Right. 7:20 start, folks, so that Steve can get it up by 8. Steve Scher. Every morning. He beat me here just another time. It's tough. I'm going to have to start getting on here like 7:10 just to get here before you.
Yeah, well, I have to go downstairs to the basement. You have to get out, dressed, and out.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot. Let's go, man.